Yeah, good to vocha, boy, say. And Mazel Tov to the Knowles. It's a shame. Should be continued Simcha and Nachas. It's a shame. So the title for this year was Elul. And when we talk about Elul, what we're trying to do is to reconnect to something very alive that has largely waned in our times. Rosh Hashanah already more than 100 years ago has a whole. No, I'll say it this way. I'll say it this way. When I first started Yeshiva Gedolah in Eretz Yisrael, came to one of the Choshev Yeshiva, Haifa, and the first Zman in Yeshiva was Elul. Which in the yeshivas is like a zman unto itself. It's Rosh Chodesh until Yom Kippur. And I had been in Yeshiva Tana, but then coming into Yeshiva Gdel already at an older age, the beginning shiur was 17 years old. And I remember really being taken by the atmosphere in the yeshiva. There was a certain electricity in the air. Elul was something very, very palpable. Everybody, there was a focus, there was a certain intensity. Everybody was in the Elul mode, and I was very taken by that, inspired, elevated. There was Sfarim that were going around, and then like the Sifsei Chaim, Reb Chaim Friedlander, Sifsei Chaim was like almost a must-have. Like it was all over the Beis Medrash. Everybody had one, and other Sfarim, and about. Sometime into Elul, Mashgiach, today he's one of the senior Mashgichim, I guess probably in his 90s, Reb Uri Weisblum, spoke and he said, "Why don't we feel Elul in the yeshiva?" I was like, let all the air out of me. And he said, he remembers, he said, when he was a Bacher in Be'er Yaakov under Reb Shloimeh Volbe, he said, then we felt Elul. Then we felt Elul. So I was like, oh, right? But you know what? Rabbi Avigdor Miller, who wasn't in yeshiva in Israel after he was in yeshiva in Europe. He was in Slabodka in Lithuania. And I remember him talking, and he said, "We don't feel Elul anymore. In Slabodka, we felt it." I mean, what Rabbi Weisblum said, he felt in Be'er Yaakov, Rabbi Avigdor Miller wasn't relating to that as Elul. Okay, he said in Slabodka, we felt it in the air. He said, you walked into the butcher shop and you saw Elul on the butcher's face. It was all over the place. And he described meeting an old timer in Slabodka who said, we lost it. We don't have it anymore. He said, I remember, he said, before World War I, he said that every shul, he said every day there was a talk in the shul and everybody just closed up shop and it was in the air. Okay. And yet we have Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who's well before Rabbi Avigdor Miller was even thinking about being born, who's writing, I remember when, right, the call of Elul, he said it struck trepidation into everybody's hearts and it elevated everybody. And then he launches into his analysis of why don't we feel it anymore? And he has a very profound analysis, which we'll touch on. But the point that I'm making is not to so much focus on, hey, we don't have it anymore, as much as to focus on that there is an inherent electricity in the times now. From now going through, it's coming up, the Yom Ne'roim, Sukkot, the whole system. And we're challenged today. One of the main reasons, one of, I mean, main reason, one of the reasons that Yisrael Salanter points to is that since in general, you don't have conscientiousness just permeating the air all around you, you very much kind of are on your own in trying to create that Elul reality. Whereas in earlier times, the whole atmosphere around you supported that. It was almost like, see the descriptions in the earlier times, it was almost like it was socially unacceptable to waste somebody's time during Elul. Like, it's Elul, there's that focus. And the yeshivas until today, and certain yeshivas, but not so long ago, it was considered unacceptable to make a chasana during Elul. Elul has to have exclusive focus. But there was an uncle of mine got married. He wanted the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, Reb David Povarsky, to be Masada Kiddushin, and it was the last day of Av. It was like going to be the evening of Rosh Chodesh Elul. And Reb David Povarsky told him, "I can be Masada Kiddushin for you on condition that it's timed such that I can be at my seat in yeshiva at Shkia." Right? At Shkia of Rosh Chodesh Elul. So they had to time the chuppah such that he would be able to be back in yeshiva in his seat at the, when Elul would hit. What is the essence of Elul? And how can we connect to it? So if we just approach it very straightforward, Elul is about preparing for Rosh Hashanah. Elul is about preparing for the Yom
Tshuva.
Tshuva, that's right. And this, again, Rabbi Sol Salanter talks about, he makes an interesting comment, an interesting observation in his letter, where he says that you become aware that days are coming up where Hashem is going to be scrutinizing each person under a microscope and making his decisions accordingly. And he said, and that should be enough to shake people up and get them onto a certain track. He says, but you see a paradoxical phenomenon. He says, you see a paradoxical phenomenon. It shakes up some people and it doesn't shake up others. Now, you would think, who are the ones that it shakes up? It shakes up people who are a little bit off the track, and suddenly they hear the call of the shofar and they know Rosh Hashanah is coming, they better get themselves back on track. And the others who have been on track the whole time, they don't get it shaken up. But he says, paradoxically, it's the other way around. He says, you can almost measure a person's spiritual level in the converse, meaning the more a person needs to feel desperate, the less desperate he feels, and the more secure a person really can feel, the more trepidation he feels as he's approaching Rosh Hashanah. So he says, okay, I'm just saying in a very broad way right now, and this is really obvious. He says that in general, the more spiritually sensitive a person is, the more he's going to respond to spiritual realities. A person who's used to living conscientiously, when he knows that there's going to be a momentous spiritual season coming up, he's going to respond that much more. And here we're talking about a Yom HaDin, he's going to be the one who's sensitive to the Yom HaDin, even though he might be in better shape. Whereas the person who is spiritually insensitive will be less sensitive to it. So that's really, number one is the understanding that Hashem is calling on us, telling us that there's a Yom HaDin coming up. But I want to take that to a bit of a deeper level and put ourselves into the right place. And that is the following. The Yom HaDin covers the whole world. We know that. Medina is Bayom. It's not just about Jews. Yom Kippur is about the Jewish people. But Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaDin, Day of Judgment, it's a day of judgment that covers the whole world. Everyone has to stand judgment. Jewish people are being judged. The Europe is being judged, Africa is being judged, everybody's being judged. Yet, most of the world is oblivious to it. How would they know? Right? How would the people in Zambia know that this is Yom HaDin? So they don't realize it, but actually, the whole reality of Zambia for the coming year is also being decided on Rosh Hashanah. But the difference is that when it comes to the Bnei Yisrael, Hashem said, I want to clue them in. This is what's important to understand. Hashem is not sitting as a cold Dayan, basically waiting for you to be brought in. And okay, now let's see. Let's take a tally. What Hashem is actually doing with his people is he is sending out under the table or over the table an alert. Is the Yom HaDin coming up? And let's appreciate the affection that Hashem is showing with that message. In other words, what he's saying is there's going to be a Magid. That is inevitable. But I want you to do well. And therefore, I'm cluing you in advance. I'm cluing you in advance. And that is actually part of the simcha that we experience on Rosh Hashanah. Meaning, the Sfarim Chazal already talk about this. It seems paradoxical. Why is Rosh Hashanah a day of simcha? Why is it a Yom Tov? It should just be a scary day. It should begin and end with that. Sudas, Simchas Yom Tov, where does that come in? One of the reasons of the Simchas Yom Tov is in the fact that Hashem is showing us beforehand. He says, "I'm going to be wearing the hat of a judge, but at the same time, under the table, I'm busy alerting you, and I'm busy telling you, Day of Judgment comes up, and here I'm passing you different tips under the table as to what you can do because I want to see you come out with a favorable judgment." Oh, that's right. That's what he wants. That's what he wants, and therefore. One example is the shofar. The shofar is a very powerful tool. We're not going to get into that now because our subject is the preparation. But as far as we're concerned, indeed, being told beforehand, here, I want you to come presentable. You're not going to be pulled in by surprise or even obliviously like the rest of the world, but I'm giving you this notification so that you can come prepared because I want you to get the most favorable judgment you can. Now, really, it goes a number of steps further. It goes a number of steps further. And that is that it's not only that, but Hashem actually set Elul up as a time of rachamim and favor and closeness. In other words, Rosh Hashanah will be a day of judgment. Rosh Hashanah is not a simple day. We're talking about more as we get closer. But that is prefaced by a time of rachamim, a time of closeness, and a time of siyata dishmaya, where Hashem is saying, "I am putting myself out there now. I'm making myself available to you. I want you to succeed. In fact, even more than that, I'm invested in you. I'm invested in you." And therefore, Elul is a time for a number of things. We might, if we say it in a very general way, what we'll say is as follows. And some draw this parallel. We see that when Ahasuerus had his whole campaign, so it says that each woman was brought to the palace. They spent 12 months preparing for their meeting with him. Spent 12, it wasn't a very tasteful situation what went on there, but we're drawing a certain mashal. It says that she was given 12 months to bathe in the most quality whatever's, okay, that whatever perfumes and this and that, skincare, etc. But not only that, and this is something that, just a regular person couldn't necessarily afford. They had all the resources that the royal palace put at their disposal, but it wasn't only that. It says, Es kol asher tamar yinosin to the king. Anything she requested, meaning if she said, she could hand in a whole big list of makeup and cosmetics and all kinds of things. Whatever you want, I'm going to make available to you. Why? Because, on the contrary, the idea here is not to fail people in the test, but the king is looking for the one who's going to be most optimal. He wants to give each one the biggest chance of presenting herself that way. He wants them to be presented in the best way possible. So, setting aside Achashverosh, we know that there are certain deeper allusions in the Megillah to the Malkos Shel Olam. What Hashem is telling us is, see if throughout Elul you can come to Rosh Hashanah presenting yourself in the most favorable way possible, so to speak. I'm going to be setting up a new year. I'm going to be setting up a new world, a new existence. I'm going to be auditing people for roles. Right? I'm going to be auditing people for roles. Present yourself. I'm going to put myself, so to speak, at your disposal so that when you come to present yourself to me, you can be doing it in the most optimal way possible. Now, why? It's not just about rachamim. It's not just that he has mercy, but it's that he's actually invested in us. It's that he's actually invested in us. And this is something to appreciate, how each Jewish neshama is a very great investment on Hashem's part. Each Jewish neshama is a once-in-history occurrence. No two neshamas are the same. just like no two people are the same. Never had two people in history who are simply identical in terms of looks, personality, life circumstances, and the path that they had in life. That reflects the fact that on a much, much deeper and more profound level, no two neshamas are the same. Every neshama is something very, very unique to Hashem. And every neshama is actually something Chazal tell us that Hashem says, I would have created the world and all of the events of history just for your role in this world, or to put it differently, for your relationship with me. That is, would justify on my part, that would warrant creating the entire universe. And therefore, it's not just that Hashem is coming and saying, here, I'm going to give you a chance. Hashem is coming and saying, your success is something that I, Kviyachol, carry great stakes in because your neshama is something very precious to me. I want that neshama back with everything that I invested in it. I want to get the biggest product for that. I want to get the greatest returns on that neshama that I invested in you. And therefore, here, I'm not just helping you, but I'm actually a shareholder. I'm actually a shareholder in you. I have very great stakes in you. I'm very invested in you. And therefore, I want to see you get to the best place you can possibly get. And I'm going to be there helping you with that. Now, let's take that a step further. Let's take that a step further. So, on the most immediate level, when we talk about tshuva, it's about, okay, taking stock. What is there in my life that ought to be fixed? What are the wrong things? What are the problems in my life that should be improved? And that is where it starts. That is where it starts. People should be taking an account, making a reckoning, and seeing what are things I can be improving in my life. But it goes further. It's not just about not doing wrong things. It's about, like we said before, appreciating that a neshama is something immensely great. And it's a very great investment on Hashem's part. Or to put it differently, a neshama is an open check. And this Rabbi Avigdor Miller stressed all the time. It's not primarily about not messing up. It's primarily about producing. It's primarily about becoming something. It's primarily about the relationship that you create with Hashem throughout your tenure in this world. And what you can make your neshama into. The mashal that I heard for this is that imagine somebody who buys a lottery ticket. There's a guy, he is a regular lottery ticket buyer. I don't know if it's every day, every week. I don't know how it works. Never bought a lottery ticket yet. But this person buys the lottery regularly, always in the hope that maybe one day he'll hit big. Okay, and reaches a point where the lottery was up to, I don't know, $100 million. It's reaching peaks. And this guy buys his ticket, and the rules are such, I don't know if it's like that, but for our purpose in the mashal, it's like that. The rules are such that, in the morning after they put out the winning number in the paper or whatever it is, and then you have to come and cash in. You have to bring your ticket to the lottery headquarters and show the winning number. The rule is that you have 24 hours to do that. They put it out in the paper in the morning, and then you have 24 hours to come with your ticket and show that cash in on the goods. Okay. This guy was busy with other things, and they went by, and he didn't bother to check in the paper. And wakes up the next morning, he says, "Oh, I'm going to have a lottery ticket sitting in my drawer. Let's check and see what the story is." Pulls out his lottery ticket, checks the paper. Wow, his heart misses a beat. His number is the winning number. His number is the winning number. He can't believe it. Calls all his friends, calls a party for tonight, and goes running out to the lottery headquarters to cash in. He comes to the lottery headquarters and shows them the winning number. They check it up. Ooh, you're right. You've won $100 million. Just a couple of bureaucratic technicalities. What time is it now? 10:04. 10:04. Deadline is 10. Sorry. What? Headline is 10. Those are the rules. 24 hours from when we publicize it the day before. Nothing doing. He says, what? Because I missed it by a few minutes. Sorry, those are the rules. The rules are the rules. He can't believe it. He's totally devastated. He's going home a broken man. As his friends waiting for him at home, they're all ready with the champagne. He walks through the door and just bursts into tears. He can't believe it. He already had his whole life mapped out for him, $100 million. He's going to be living a different life. Walks in, bursts into tears. He tells his friends, I'm not even going to be able to cover the champagne. Tells them what happened. And he's totally devastated. One of them comes over to him and decides he's going to try to be mechazek him. He's going to try to make him feel better. And he says, listen, it's true. The $100 million you're not going to get. But let me show you the bright side of it. The lottery ticket is yours. No one can take that away from you. You might have missed the deadline, but that ticket is yours. No one can take that away from you. You could do whatever you want with it. You can use it as a grocery list. You can use it as a tissue. There's all kinds of things you can do with a piece of paper this big, right? So forget the $100 million. The ticket is yours. Yeah, looks at him. To go to a psychiatric ward, like what's totally crazy. So, the point that we're making is that let's not just talk about what are you doing wrong, which needs to be improved, but let's talk about each of us being that open check, each of us being that lottery ticket. And at the end of the day, what are we going to have to show for ourselves? How are we going to make good on that very, very great investment called an neshama? That's the question. And here Hashem is coming and saying, and this is really a big part of what the whole system of the Yom HaRayim is. That is, Hashem is saying, I put you into this world in order to provide you with a glorious opportunity to make something very great out of yourself. Don't sell yourself short. Don't sell yourself short. And the Yom HaRayim each year is actually meant as a reminder. It's meant as an alert to wake you up. Otherwise, you just kind of roll through life quickly and suddenly, some of Avigdor Miller used to say, the greatest tragedy of all, the greatest tragedy of all. There's Avera, and Avera is a problem. But an Avera could be rectified. Don't do Averas, right? But an Avera could be rectified. There's tshuva. There's tshuva. And even if Chas v'Shalom, it wasn't rectified through tshuva, and it has to be dealt with in the next world, even that has its limits. Now, again, we don't want to get there. As is Hashem, as long as your pulse is beating, you can avoid that. But even that has its limits. There's a limited period of time that a person who in general is living as a conscientious person goes through the punishment. And that too is for the purpose of enabling the person to come cleansed and just be able to move on to really enjoy it. But the bigger tragedy, he says, or the tragedy is if a person did not live his years right, and suddenly, the moment after realizes, ooh, I forgot. Let me quickly go back and yes, accomplish something. Because he's coming now and sees, okay, you had a check, a glorious check, and you made it out for $15 instead of 100 million. That, what are you going to do about that afterwards? What are you going to do about that afterwards? So here's the reminder that comes and tells us, and hey, you have to appreciate that this is something that can be accomplished. The single day of life is enough to really cash in. And if you're given another day and then another day, utilize each one. But this is what Hashem is coming and saying.
We have no deadline.
No deadline. Each person has his own. But Hashem is coming and saying, don't miss the boat. Don't miss the boat. Make something out of yourself. Don't just not do wrong things. be able to come to Shamayim and show your accomplishments. Now let's try to put that into a little bit more concrete terms, because of course, this is a whole world. But if we want to put that into concrete terms, what will that mean? What would that mean in practice? So we'll just touch on a few areas of the proactive system of making myself into more than I am. We'll just touch on a couple of areas. One of them is when it comes to relationship with Hashem. Awareness of Hashem, a dynamic relationship with Hashem. That is one of the areas where we have a lifetime career of growth, of making Hashem more and more of a part of my consciousness. And that is one of the great things that we actually make out of ourselves. The consciousness of Hashem that we bring into our mind. And the more we do to develop that into a real multifaceted relationship, meaning the consciousness of Hashem leads us to gratitude, leads us to awe, leads us to fear of messing up with him, also an important part of it, leads us to love, etc. The more of a real relationship it turns into, the more your neshama is taking on form, the more it's taking on its shine, the more you're developing it, the more you're turning it into what it was meant to be. Then there's the whole realm of Avodas Hamidos. Avodas Hamidos, it's very, very important to understand that this is another major part of turning us into who we are. Meaning, Avodas Hamidos is not a reactive business. If you struggle in some area of another machaber, you have to work on it, you have to improve it. That's a very superficial way of approaching it. Rather, Avodas Hamidos is also a lifetime career of perfecting character, which is not just removing faults. This is something that there's more and more and more that could be done. In fact, I've quoted this a number of times. So Avodas Hamidos is not a response to a problem. Well, in a way it is, but it's a problem that Hashem created for that. We're all suffering from a certain fault. And that is being mortal human beings. But that fault is the great gift that Hashem gave us. In other words, in order to put us into position to fill out that check, Hashem said, here, let me give you human limitations. Let me give you a body that's going to dull your sensitivities. Let me give you a body that's going to come along with all kinds of different faults and limitations. And now you work on letting your neshama shine through your body. You work on letting your neshama take control when it comes to ego, when it comes to all the different midos that we talk about as problems, not to think of them as problems, but rather to think of them as hurdles that Hashem put there for us in order to be able to, like we said before, make something out of ourselves. The neshama was perfect before it came into us. See how it is? That's what we're here for. The neshama was perfect before it was clumped with our body. The purpose of clumping it into a body was in order to grant it those faults, or Ramchal puts it, is in order to give us purpose, in order to give us opportunity. Hashem tacked on the faults, tacked on the limitations, tacked on the human frailties. And now the call is start working on them. Start working on them in terms of breaking out of yourself, in terms of softening your ego in order to gain sensitivity to the people around you, in terms of all the various different midos that are at play, to shine in this realm too. And this is also something that a person can always take stock and say, okay, what am I up to in that realm? What am I up to in the realm of Avodas Hamidos? What are other steps that I can take forward? All kinds of svarim that list the list of midos. We have plenty of them in English. Just take Orchas Tzadikim is a classic Musa Sefer that I'm sure has many English translations. You just look through the list at the beginning of the midos and see, where am I on the map? What is a mida that I can improve in? And realize that with every mida that you're polishing, you are allowing the godliness to shine through yourself more, which is once again letting the neshama really reach its godly identity. So those are two areas we touched on: the conscious awareness of Hashem, the area of Avodas Hamidos. The first area, of course, ties into the whole inyan of davening, which is about direct relationship with Hashem. And it goes on. But this is our point. Circling back to what we started with, we are trying to reconnect with the electricity of El, which in earlier times was much more apparent, but today we're lacking the supportive environment. But we don't want to miss that opportunity. It's an opportunity of closeness that Hashem sends us for the purpose of Him saying, I'm invested in your eternal success. Your life is a once in history opportunity. Your neshama is a once in history entity. And I want to see you make the most of it so I can give you everything that I have in store for you. We want to take that call, not squander the opportunity, and come to Rosh Hashanah showing Hashem, I appreciate the opportunities you're giving me. I appreciate what the magnitude of a neshama is and what the magnitude of life in this world is. And here's what I could show for myself. I'm presenting myself to you in this way, both for the purpose of making sure that I'm remembering what I'm here for, and also for the purpose of here, I am being interviewed by you. Here's how I'm presenting myself as a candidate for a role in the next round, in your next world. Yirtzeh Hashem, we think along these lines and remain in the, like we said, the El consciousness, the El, the consciousness of these being times of focus on the bigger opportunities that life offers and not being caught up in the day-to-day. You have to juggle the day-to-day too. But keeping focused on that, Bezos Hashem, we will make good on the great neshama that we are and make the most of our opportunities, Bezos Hashem. Good devoir.
Number we have to do because of the
The